It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Well, the Big Ten is back, and while I am here today for some mocking of the conference and its long journey to now all of a sudden be kicking off in the fall, I also am jealous of one aspect of the Big Ten's return and what they have over the Big 12. But I do have to lead off the show today by saying this. The great news and the best news out of the news today that the Big Ten will kick off on October 24th is the fact that our man Scott Frost gets to lose his 7 games this year. The Big Ten will be playing 8 plus 1. All right? All you have to do, Scotty, win 2 games. You can hit your 7 loss mark, and all will be right with the world. Much like Matt Campbell has already taken to his contractually obligated 5 losses this season, Scott Frost is getting damn near the point where it's contractually obligated for him to lose 7 games at Nebraska, and he will now get the opportunity to do so. And you know what? All this fighting and hemming and hawing and parents suing people, all that noise that was coming from Lincoln, Nebraska, you've earned it today, Scott. Scott Frost, my man, you have absolutely earned your chance to go out there and lose 7 football games this fall. So I have to congratulate Scott Frost on that before we actually get rolling with the show today. Welcome into The Game, John Kurtz, Mitch Fortner with you. You can hit us up on Twitter at TheGameKMAN or tweet us at, tweet myself, rather, at J.O. Kurtz.
Or at Mitch the Fort. Scott Frost is the reigning defending jabroni of the year. Remember
right.
That? It was announced in Memphis.
That's right. Reigning jabroni of the year, Scott Frost. Ah, that's another great thing, Mitch. We get Scott Frost press conference clips now. He would have just faded into oblivion until the spring came around when perhaps there would have been a season played. But now we get to make fun of Scott Frost on the reg. And I tell you what, there is nothing that returns me to a sense of normalcy like being able to take shots at Matt Campbell, being able to take shots at Scott Frost, and being able to take shots at Les Miles. I mean, I tell you what, we are hashtag blessed around here because the regional rivals have some real dummies and overrated coaches to poke fun at. I mean, it is pinata season all up in this.
We get after Les Miles because he can't keep his train of thought. We get after Jamie Pollard because he's comedically cocky. And then last year we got after Scott Frost because of his comment about wearing hoodies in cold temperatures. Like, you can't be a man if you're warming up wearing a hoodie. You're not going to wear a hoodie during the game. And what did he do all year on the sideline? Wear a hoodie. What is it going to be this year now that they're playing? Gloves? Long socks? I'm begging for him to make a comment so we can continue this trend.
You've just connected everything, Mitch, because that was the video that we always make fun of from Jamie Pollard. He was offering ways to keep Chris Del Conte, the AD at Texas, warm. He was offering him hand warmers and gloves and things like that. So that's apparently something that needs to be offered up to Scott Frost. Everything comes full circle. Here for it, and that's the best news that we've got today with the Big Ten. Curry Sexton is going to join the show today. Always insightful, always thoughtful. We'll ask him about Skylar Thompson's performance and see what a former K-State receiver thinks about that. It's coming up at 4:25. But I realize hindsight is 20/20, and it sounds easier for me to make this point now than it did before the Big 12 went out and farted out 3 losses against the Sun Belt over the weekend. But I did say going into the season, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for the Big 12 to be playing non-conference games. When you saw the SEC adopting a plan where they were going to play all league games, now we're seeing the Big 10 adopt a plan where they are playing all league games, and at the end, to get their extra game in, extra TV inventory, they're doing the exact same thing I clamored for the Big 12 to do, which is just have, in this case, it's the West number 2 play the East number 2. West 3, East 3. Cross-division games, they're based on where you finished. For the Big 12, it's you have 1v2, and then you have 3v4, 5v6, and so on and so forth. That made so much more sense from a let's-not-get-coronavirus standpoint, for one. And now K-State is sitting here looking at Arkansas State having to shut down its next game, presumably because of COVID testing. But even more so now, the part that's hindsight 2020 that you look at now and say, should have gone that route. I'm listening today to all of these Oklahoma fans and Oklahoma media types complain about the Big 12 and the reputation hit that the league has taken, and it's going to screw Oklahoma out of the college football playoff. And while there are parts of that that are infuriating, there is truth to it that the Big 12's reputation took a hit. You know why? Because the Big 12 was the only league, I guess you could throw the ACC in there, but for the most part, the Big 12 is the only league to go put themselves out there in position to lose bad non-conference games in week one. That's what happens. If you're going to play non-conference games, you have the opportunity then to hurt your reputation by losing these games. And now, especially with the Big Ten coming in, the mood starts to shift from, are we going to get games in, pandemic year, it's weird, to everybody falling back into their same routines, like we talked about to open the show, of a college football season. And that's where the narrative is going. Now we're going more to a serious, actual college football, what does it mean, sports kind of narrative. And what it means right now is that the Big 12 is a pinata and a punching bag for everybody. If you would have just adopted the model where you play everybody in league, there's no chance for this to happen. Now, you can still have some bad losses. You go out and lose to Kansas, it's going to be a bad loss. But it doesn't reflect on you the same way that it does losing to Sunbelt teams. Even though Arkansas State and Louisiana may be better than the bottom three or four teams of the Big 12. I mean, that's absolutely possible. But it's the name value that hurts you. And you are in the spotlight going out and playing these games on national TV the first week of the season, needlessly, when you could have just done an all-conference schedule. That was absolutely plausible and possible. And it's what the league should have done. Because now, if it does turn into a somewhat normal season when it comes time for playoff selection to be happening, you all of a sudden have already taken this reputation hit. And it will be used against Oklahoma, Texas, whoever it might be, from the Big 12, if and when we get there. You've done harm to your reputation, and what's even more maddening about it is that the SEC is just sitting around watching this happen and laughing. It's the same way that the SEC has rigged the game when it comes to their scheduling. They'll go play conference games the first 2 weeks of the season in a normal year. They'll play conference games in early September when everybody else is messing around with the Sunbelt teams, and so they get prime TV slots for conference games. And then at the end of the year, when everybody's beating themselves up in conference, they'll roll out Nickel State, and they get the, in essence, bye week in late November, which is brilliant. And I hate to say it, but the SEC had the right idea here, and the Big 12 has harmed its reputation, and now the Big 12 has to sit here and take it, because for whatever reason, the league was so desperate to play these non-conference games instead of just doing conference plus one. And you know what else you had to do? You had to pay to get beat. K-State shelled out like $500,000 to lose to Arkansas State. All of these athletic departments desperately need money. I don't think you would have had to pay a guarantee rate to just schedule TCU at the end of the year in your bonus game. You know, the 9+1 model here, conceivably, that we would be talking about. So it's doubly frustrating, man, to sit here and listen to the league get run through the mud over the course of this week when it didn't have to be like that. It didn't have to happen. You could have just done what the Big Ten is now doing. So there is some wisdom, in a way, to what the Big Ten is doing here, and I am jealous of the fact that the Big Ten is going that route with their schedule.
I'm not as furious as you are, no doubt about that, because I felt the Big 12 needed the non-con game or games when it did make sense for the college football playoff. The ACC doesn't care because they're going to get a team in. Clemson is going to get in unless something crazy happens. The SEC doesn't care about the Big Ten jumping in because they already have a spot in the college football playoff. Somebody in the SEC will make it unless bizarro world will happen. But yes, as the Big 12, I would be a little bit furious that the Big Ten is just going to slide in and backdoor their way into the college football playoff unless something crazy happens. Because really, it's the Big Ten that does threaten the Big 12 about that spot. They could potentially steal a spot depending on what Oklahoma and Texas does, depending on because of the brand name. It is because of the brand name, because the Big Ten, they felt, all right, after this 1 week, we're just going to let these three conferences take these four spots when we just have just as good as a chance to get in. And we can only play and get away with eight games.
Well, Mitch, I'm not even really – I mean, you make a compelling point. The Big Ten is going to be a factor here I mean, you betcha they're going to wind up being considered for the playoff, even though I don't think that's really official as of right now. But it's more just going up against anybody, whether it's going to be Notre Dame. I mean, if Notre Dame goes through their schedule, lose to Clemson, and then that's it, Notre Dame's held up there as a one-loss team against a one-loss Oklahoma. You bet this narrative about the Big 12 being awful because they went out and played these non-con games and lost to the Sun Belt will get held up against them. And it was something completely avoidable. I'd imagine, and I'll probably ask Gene Taylor. I did write down today, I have some Gene questions for when we'll have him on the show next on Monday. I'll ask him about it. Like, why did you guys feel like you needed to go play these non-conference games? I would imagine it's going to be something about the coaches wanting to get a game in before they go play league games and they're worried about winning a league championship, whatever. But to me, that's where, as leadership, you have to have the interest of the conference in mind and say, look, guys, like, if we are trying to do what's best for, one, fighting the pandemic, a.k.a. in return the conference, and two, just the conference's competitive chances here to go to the playoff, we don't need to be playing non-conference games that we could lose, and it would look bad. If you lose a conference game, you lose a conference game. That's fine. But I think these coaches worry about it too much on an individual basis. I would have preferred the athletic directors and the commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, to step in and say, look, no, that's not going to be the best way to do this. So there will be a decent amount of I told you so-ing here on this show today. I mean, it is a sports talk show. You should expect that. But this is one of those points where I feel very vindicated in saying I told you so.
Well, truthfully, I think a big part about that non-conference game was to have an extra home game. That's more revenue. You're bringing in more money. If they didn't have that non-con game, it's 5 on the road and 4 at home, an uneven schedule.
But how much money are you making from these games? Attendance. A lot of these places, Iowa State had no fans. How much money did Iowa State make on Saturday? How much money did Jamie Pollard have lining his pockets on Saturday from playing in front of the band and Louisiana's fans, like Louisiana's parents? Nothing.
But the Arkansas, if K-State beat Arkansas State, that's a win that's going to look a lot better than Texas Tech and KU. Maybe another team if you want to throw
does
in.
It,
if West Virginia
does it? If you're, let's say you're playing TCU.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mitch, come on, man. If K-State is finishing 5th in the Big 12 and playing TCU at the end of the year, take it or leave it. And what are we talking about
well,
at that
yes.
point anyway?
It doesn't matter.
And what is it? Exactly. And what does it matter for K-State now, even that they had beaten Arkansas State to begin the year? It really doesn't. The risk-reward is so out of whack there. The risk is what happened on Saturday. You lose 3 embarrassing games that are more embarrassing in lack of name recognition than they are in actual X's and O's and talent and what was out there on the field. And then your reputation gets run through the mud as a conference. The upside is, all right, I guess you got your jollies off playing a game and the coaches can feel better about playing a game before they get into conference play. But if we're talking about this from a grand scale, would have helped out Oklahoma and Texas an awful, awful lot if those games were not played this weekend. And I will play you some audio later on of what I heard today from an Oklahoma-centric, I will say, college football voice today about being upset and unhappy with the Big 12. Now, I'm not saying that because Oklahoma fans and media mob, because they're upset with the league, that conference realignment is going to happen and they're going back to the Pac-12. I'm not suggesting anything like that. But I can tell you that they're upset, and I do think they have a right to be upset, even though some of it is a bit too self-righteous for me.
So the game against Arkansas State, even though K-State lost to you, was a waste of time?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like right now, yeah. I think it would have made a lot more sense. I very much prefer a game at the end of the year against TCU, whoever it is that you finish next to in the standings. Yes, no doubt. And I would have said that before.
Well, I guarantee to the administration, to the team, that was not a waste of time. Because you're talking about what we saw with K-State's weaknesses and what kind of problems they needed to get over. They got that done before the conference schedule showed up. When the games, what you count as the ones that really do matter, which they do, obviously. But now they can get to figuring that out. You called it, I don't know if it's on PowerCat Game Day or here on the game, you called it a preseason game. Well, yeah. Now that K-State can work out the kinks.
I don't know that I really likened it to like an NFL preseason game or something, but I mean, you worked out the kinks with an embarrassing loss. Like You could do that in the Big 12, and it's the embarrassment factor is far less if that game's against Oklahoma, if that game's against TCU, whoever. The embarrassment factor goes away, and you're not – nobody is singling out K-State over and over again for losing to Arkansas State 4 days after it happened in the national media because it's not as embarrassing of a loss. All right, we've got Curry Sexton coming up here. Need to get to him. How did Skylar Thompson, lightning rod, after that game on Saturday, grade out, according to a former K-State wide receiver? We'll find out next. Bit of breaking news here before we get to Curry Sexton. The college basketball season has an official start date, according to, well, basically all of the college basketball media reporters across the country, but I am specifically going to quote our guy, John Rothstein, Stein. November 25th is when the college basketball season will start. So mark your calendars. November 25th, we will get college hoops coming back to us. Well, big day today, college athletics. Big Ten announces that they are coming back. October 24th will be the first action for the Big Ten, and now we know college basketball will be back on November 25th. But right now we have former K-State wide receiver and team captain Curry Sexton with us here on the game. Appreciate the time, as always, in joining us, Curry. How bad of a loss was that in your eyes on Saturday?
You know, it's hard to assess that in the short term without being, you know, hyperbolic. It's obviously not a good loss, but at the same time, I think ultimately that was a good football team that we played on Saturday. Should we have beaten them? Likely yes. But all things considered, the fact that they were, and I know some guys mentioned this in the press, the fact that we were able to even have a game in the first place, you know, get some young guys on the field and you know, make some mistakes that they can ultimately learn from, I think is a positive. So I think in the short term, it's a horrible loss, but how the team bounces back will determine what kind of loss that is over the course of the season.
Well, as a former receiver yourself, I'm interested for your take on Jonathan Adams, who was a beast on Saturday with three touchdown catches against K-State. Like, was Arkansas State doing anything fancy there, or was that just simply a matter of him continually beating K-State defensive backs one-on-one?
Yeah, that's all that was. I mean, you know, he big, tall guy with great ball skills and the ability to high point the football. And ultimately, if you're gonna continue to put, you know, 5'10", 6-foot corners. I don't think A.J. Parker probably actually measures in at 6 foot. But if you're going to put, you know, undersized guys up against him in one-on-one coverage, that's just what you're going to get. And the quarterbacks, you know, Bonner and Hatcher were doing a good job of just putting the ball where he could go up and get it. And you know, for K-State, Adams is a guy with some incredible ball skills, a guy who we're going to see play on someday soon. And so ultimately, that was just, yeah, I mean, that was just, he was a better player than the guys that he was going up against for K-State, and that ultimately won the day.
You know, I had this question asked to me a lot, and when we start getting into this area of like, hey, what could the coaches have done here, I realize that I am completely in over my head. So I'll just ask it to you. Like, schematically, was there anything that they could have done differently to provide some extra help there in your eyes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anytime you have a guy like Adams or any, you know, dominant receiver, it makes the most sense to roll the coverage, insert some sort of a cover two scheme, where you're rolling the coverage against that particular receiver and putting a safety directly over the top. And so essentially, more effectively, you're double teaming that guy without it being a true double team. Because with an outside receiver with his size and his skill set, I'm not sure that a true double team would work. I know we had a lot of fans and people on Twitter clamoring for that, but that's not really a practical. That's not really a practical decision that can be made. So again, I think with a guy like him, who's obviously he's an outside receiver, you roll that corner up, you try to get a little bit of a jam on him. And then, you know, to the extent that he's able to get a good release on the corner, then you have a safety over the top with the corner still playing underneath. So it could be a straight cover two coverage. It could be more of a two man coverage. But either way, you're not allowing him to go one-on-one, whether it's in man-to-man or cover three, against a smaller guy.
Corey Sexton talking with us. We've seen trick plays be a problem since Chris Klieman really took over. There were five or six different games last year where teams hit K-State with that. Last we saw them before the Arkansas State game, Navy obviously had a huge one that won the game for them, and it popped up again, not just a fake punt, but there were two on offense. Defensively, how do you balance trying to be more aggressive, which clearly these guys are. They want to be more aggressive than what Tom Hayes was, for instance, defensively, but balance that with not getting burned so often by those.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're right. It puts you in a tough position. How do you prepare for those without sacrificing short yardage plays? But I think the frustrating thing about in particular the double pass and the fake punt was, with the double pass, I think any sort of awareness from anybody with their eyes in the backfield could have seen that ball was thrown about 5 yards backward. I know that's hard for maybe the back end guys to see, but with a little bit of communication, I feel like that's something where that's something that could have been stopped. And then the fake punt, I think anybody knew that in that down and distance from that position on the field, that a fake punt was very, very likely. I think that was extremely frustrating. I think that was the most frustrating play that happened in that game. Just because everybody that I was watching with, we all said, here comes a fake punt. I think the fact that we were in a more of a traditional punt return type formation there, the fact that we weren't playing a true safe zone punt defense was frustrating, because when they're inside the 50 like they were, and they throw a deep ball like they did, there's no way that, you know, whether you have a punt returner who's back or a deep safety, there's no way that ball shouldn't have been ultimately knocked down by someone who was playing as a punt returner or a deep safety. So that to me was the most frustrating, because I think everybody could see that fake punt coming.
Corey Sexton talking with us. What was the best fake or trick play, I should say, that you guys had throughout your career that perhaps didn't get used? Because I was trying to rack my brain. I don't remember that you guys used a whole lot of trick plays when you were playing.
No, we practiced the heck out of them, but we never used them. There was one that we were in a, it was a trips, so we had a trips receiver set, a bunch set, I was at the point of the bunch, and then Lockett and whoever our third receiver was were back behind me, and we threw a bubble screen to Lockett that was a backwards pass, and then I would have gone out and acted like I was going to stock block and then released down the sideline. And we practiced that, you know, a couple times a day, and always were on Coach Kimmel to get that in the game script, but it never made it. I don't know if that was because of Lockett's his throwing arm or my speed, but that was probably my favorite.
I like that one. I wish that would have seen the light of day. How do you grade Skyler's performance? I think, listen, you're a smart guy and you are on social media. I'm sure you see all the comments about Skyler's play and how much of a lightning rod he can be. How do you fairly evaluate what he did?
You know, I thought he played pretty well. I thought by and large he made pretty good decisions. Obviously, he missed a couple throws. You know, the deep ball over the middle going to the north end zone to Phillip Brooks, that's the one that I'm sure he'd love to have back. But I think, you know, some of his misses, you know, the throws that people are characterizing as Skyler misses, were just as much on the receivers as Skyler. I mean, I can think of three instances where Shabash Taylor and Malik Knowles, were pretty open, and Skyler threw a pretty good ball, but those two guys failed to track the ball in the air. The ball ended up falling over their outside shoulder. And they were unable to bring it in. There was one instance where, and I know Sebastian's a guy with limited game experience, but there's one instance where the ball was put over his outside shoulder, and he fit, you know, his was, you know, it, his adjustment was to the point where the ball, he didn't even come close to getting his hands on it because he was failing to track it well. So I think ultimately, you know, are they perfect throws? No. But if you're a Division I Power 5 starting receiver, those are plays that you have to make 9 times out of 10. And so for me, I think I was more frustrated with the receiver's ability to track down the deep ball than I was with Skyler putting it in perfect position. Could he have played better? Absolutely. But I thought Skyler played good enough for us to win on Saturday.
I like that. And I think some of that is fair. And that's where I think it's great to have your perspective on that, because that's something that to us, the observer who did not play college football, we can't always tell. I mean, in general, did you feel better? I did feel better, I guess I can say that, about the pass-catching options and how explosive they looked when you take into account Sebastian Taylor running open the entire game and Youngblood not even playing. You have Malik Knowles. Briley Moore looked very good. Like, how much better do the pass-catching options look this year?
Yeah, I think they're night and day. I think, you know, Malik looked pretty healthy. Sebastian looks like he's taking a step forward. Both, you know, both welcome sights. Briley Moore was awesome. I mean, I don't think we've probably had a true pass. I think I said this last week, but he appears to be the first true pass-catching tight end we've had. It's probably Jaren Mistrud. So really excited by what he brought to the table. And then I think, you know, we saw a little bit again of Sammy Wheeler. You know, Jack Sinean caught that pass down the middle of the field. You know, and then again, we're without Josh Youngblood, without Wykeen Gill. Phillip Brooks made a nice play on the first touchdown. I think we have a lot of depth there. But ultimately, we got to find some guys who you can really trust to make go up and make tough plays. You know, like some of the ones that were missed on Saturday, because if a couple of those are made, that the outcome of that game is likely a different one.
Curry, always love your insight and chatting with you. Thanks for joining us once again this week, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
All right, there's Curry Sexton, former Wildcat wide receiver and team captain. Love the point on Skyler, because I had the thought, like, okay, Sebastian Taylor doesn't have quite the cachet built up in his career. I would say that Skyler Thompson does. So who do you trust there as to who is off? And, for instance, there's the play to Malik Knowles, where it looked like Knowles should have headed down the sideline and it could have been a touchdown early in the game, but Skyler's throw winds up looking like it's on him when Knowles cut off the route. Those things sometimes can be on the receivers as well. The My Guy curse is officially dead, and we need to talk about that next. My Guy curse is dead. It's done. Briley Moore was awesome on Saturday. 6 catches, 54 yards, 1 touchdown. A bright spot in an otherwise very forgettable game. All right? And don't just take my word for it. Take Chris Kleiman's word for it, okay?
He's probably one of the hungriest guys we have on the football team. He has a chip on his shoulder because nobody thought he was good enough to play in the Big 12 or at any Power 5. He's come in and gained instant respect. He handles his business. He practices hard. He competes. He holds people accountable. He does all the right things. And I think we can get more out of Briley Moore. And that's what I'm going to challenge Briley to, is that he needs to be more for us.
All right. Well, I didn't even realize the end of that clip was going to be Kleiman saying he can do Briley Moore for the team. But he was really good, man. Not just 6 catches, 54 yards, and a touchdown. The fourth down conversion play that he had, Skyler trusted him and went to him right away in a huge spot. And at that point, it allowed them to drive down and tie the game. The curse is dead. All right, I anointed him my guy. We get all scared off by some injury whispers. Briley Moore, maybe an injury. But he played, and he played very well. So we can put this whole curse to bed. It's done.
The curse is not dead. First of all, I didn't hear in that clip Coach Kleiman saying, yeah, the My Guy curse is done. John Curtis has nothing to worry about anymore. So Briley Moore played one game. What's the one My Guy we bring up every time whenever the curse is brought up? That is Javon Thomas. Now, when you say, hey, it wasn't too bad, you always bring up the West Virginia game. However, he did play 2 whole seasons. At K-State, and we think of him in a negative fashion when it comes to the My Guy curse. Briley Moore has played one game. I think if it's fair to say the curse has been lifted, nothing to worry about, we can go on with the My Guy future, give it a season. I got to see this season, because it's a long way to go. I want the best for him, don't get me wrong. Hey, I know his name now. I've seen him play. I know what he can do. All right, 6 catches, that's all right. Yeah, that's pretty good.
6 catches in a game for a K-State tight end. I mean, you have to think about that on a relative scale. That is not created equally, all right? Six catches and a touchdown for a K-State tight end?
You might as well call him a wide receiver, but...
I mean, that's a whole season's worth of a K-State tight end right there that he put together in one game. Just think about if Skylar Thompson put a whole season's worth of production into one game, how good we would think he is, all right? It's dead, done, finito. But just for you, Mitch, because I knew that you would come back and try and tell me the curse is still a thing, I put together this for you because I've been saying I was going to do it for a long time and we never actually have, all right? So, okay, the curse is real. Just wait for it.
Ooh, spooky.
Daniel Sands. Javon Thomas.
All right, so anytime this gets brought up, Ron Freeman, if you're listening there, anytime this gets brought up, I'll play the dark, ominous music for you, okay?
What a my guy thing for John to do with being so premature about bowing at the feet of a player.
I do it all over the place. I'm bowing at the feet of Briley Moore. You know that I worship at the altar of Chris Klieman. It's just what I do, Mitch. But I'm telling you, it's a compelling argument to say that a whole season's worth of production for a K-State tight end was crammed into one game for Briley. It's over. Put it to bed. Bury it. We don't need to worry about it anymore. Even though this bed is awesome,
I can't.
And I like talking behind the creepy music. There's no real great argument against what Briley did on Saturday.
I just feel like I'm in a graveyard and I'm looking at all these tombstones with the names on them.
Now here lies the career of Daniel Sams.
It just has this Undertaker feel to it.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for. And you know what, Mitch? Maybe at some point, maybe the curse jumps back up and does the Undertaker, like the GIF, where it flips back up.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden it's here. But for right now, it's dead. It's dead. So you can all shut up about it, okay? I'm not ruining anybody. Donovan Williams, don't worry about that. That's how long ago does Donovan Williams feel like? That seems like it was 3 years ago.
Man, if Briley Moore doesn't consistently play well, like if he just completely blanks the bed at OU, which, I mean, that's a tough game. But now I'm expecting big game Briley Moore every time. Because if you're saying 50-something yards, six catches, and a touchdown is a huge game for him, keep it up, man.
Well, it's not even – he doesn't have to be like a total superstar every game from here on out, especially because he's already done a lot of the groundwork. Like, he's laid a lot of the groundwork to be able to have a couple of, you know, two or three catch games. You know, he doesn't – the my guy curse being dead doesn't mean that every player I anoint a my guy has to be like a Ring of Honor player. It just means that they have to be not terrible and not have some crazy, weird flame-out situation happen to them.
We need to get a hold of the Zombie Toxin Haunted House folks in Junction City, see if they want to use this for their haunted house that's going to start next month.
It would be pretty scary if you know, someone was just walking through this haunted house and from behind somebody's just like,
Daniel Sands.
I mean, that's scarier to me than anybody jumping out from behind a door.
I'm pretty proud of how it came out, but unfortunately, Mitch, you're not going to be able to use it very often. They can use it if they want, but here on the show, you're not going to hear it very much because the My Guy curse is officially dead, and I'm excited for Mitch's number one song of the day coming up next. Give it to me!
Soulja Boy, tell me. Hey, I got this new dance for y'all called the Soulja Boy.
You
gotta push
that
crank back three times from left
man,
to right.
Man, man.
Soulja Boy, I'm in it. Why me crack it? Why me
the best number one song of the day that we have had in the history of number one songs of the day, and it is not even close.
I had heard this in a long time. I of course remember how big it was.
Oh, this song. I tell people this all the time in my lifetime. At least since I've been adult enough to pay attention to popular music. This song was as popular as any song that's ever existed in my lifetime.
Well, I'll get to
I don't know what the charts are going to say, Mitch, but from Man on the Street reporting, especially among my peers, because I was a freshman in college when this came out. Never a song that was more popular with everybody than this. And I learned the entire dance for Delta 6 Serenades my first week of college. You get me going with this song. I can tell you all sorts of stories.
Well, I'm sure it hasn't really stood the test of time, though. 2007.
How dare you? It is totally withstood the test of time.
2007, Crank That Soulja Boy by Soulja Boy Tell 'Em. 7 weeks at number one. He's born in Chicago, but he grew up in Atlanta, GA. 6 studio albums, 2 top tens. His only number one is what you're hearing right now. This is from his debut studio album called SouljaBoyTellEm.com. It reaches high as number 4 in the Billboard 200. But when you look at the reviews on it, as an album, it is one of the worst reviewed albums of all time that featured a number one song. How about that?
Well, you know, there's always going to be haters. And Soulja was laughing all the way to the bank. That guy was ahead of the curve, like on YouTube, and getting his music out there digitally. And he wore sunglasses that had Soulja Boy written on the lenses. So, I mean, it probably affected how he could see, but they looked really cool.
But what this song was all about was the dance to Soulja Boy, Crank That Soulja Boy. As many of those critics that didn't like the album did call Crank That Soulja Boy the biggest dance fad since the Macarena, which I would agree with that. As the YouTube video has surpassed over 400 million albums, the video that shows you how to do it. Now, you can hear in the song, basically the main musical background is a steel drum, which was known for coming from Trinidad and Tobago.
It's like Michael Scott.
Yeah, but that was Jamaica. But this was the third chart-topping hit in the last 32 years that featured a steel drum. The other two are, John?
I don't know.
Kokomo by the Beach Boys.
Okay.
And then P.I.M.P. by 50 Cent.
Yeah, like that.
So believe it or not, this is what I really like about the song. So when Soulja Boy, he co-wrote, he produced this track all on his own at the age of 16 years old. He had turned 17 when this song topped the Hot 100. Not a lot of people know about that. He wasn't even an adult when this song became big. Yeah. It made him the youngest solo artist to write, perform, and produce a number one song. That is pretty impressive, in my opinion. Rolling Stone magazine listed it the 21st best song of 2007.
Oh, go! Get out of here, Rolling Stone!
Okay, the song also received...
Sorry, I'm playing it again.
It's fine. The song received a nomination for a Grammy Award for Best Rap Song, but lost to Kanye West with the song The Good Life.
Good Life is a better song, yeah.
And on January 6, 2008, it became the first song ever to sell 3 million digital copies in the United States. In 2009, it was named the 23rd most successful song of the 2000s on the Billboard Hot 100. And in its last update, which was February of 2014, over 5 million downloads sold. I'm sure it's a lot more now.
This, for like my first 3 years of college... Every time this played at a party, all of us that were Delta Sig's Phi Pledge class, we'd all bust it out, man. You'd be drunk at a party and somebody would play Soulja Boy, and it's just your obligation at that point to then do the dance and show everybody up. And I tell you what, the ladies loved it.
Yeah, they did.
The serenades, when we did serenades and went around to all the different sorority lawns to do the dances, you know, a lot of these jabronis just got wasted and like just... threw on a song and danced around like idiots. We had practiced this. Like, I spent probably 10 hours learning this dance and practicing it all together along with some song from High School Musical.
And how'd it work out for you?
Oh, we crushed it, man. I mean, not me so much individually, but as a group, we were great. I'm going to cut the Big Ten some slack next. Yeah, all right. This one belongs in the... in the discussion with Soulja Boy, but it ain't Soulja Boy, all right?
Well, what was great about Harlem Shake, you could do whatever you wanted. It's more about what you wore. Yeah,
there was no real dance. There was no real dance to this. God.
It died much quicker than Soulja Boy.
It did. Hour two of the game. I'd let the Big Ten back in the playoff. To be honest, today's the day. Big college football news. The Big Ten is... coming back on October 24th, and I hate how pompous they are. Listen, I'm with all of you guys. I hate the Big Ten. I do. I truly, truly do. However, if I were the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, which is now squarely in the crosshairs of this decision, right? You have to be willing or unwilling to allow the most proud, pompous group of individuals in college football into your playoff or not, at least into consideration for the playoff. As much as me personally and my vendettas, I would want to say the Big Ten can absolutely get the hell out of here for trying to bring down the entire college football season by themselves and now backtracking and crawling slowly back to the game of college football like Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street when he's had 17 Quaaludes trying to get into his car. If I'm in the playoff shoes, their responsibility is to make money. Their responsibility is to deliver to ESPN the best product that they possibly can. And the fact of the matter is that including teams from the Big Ten in that discussion, at least into consideration, when you have a show every week to pump out these rankings and eyeballs to catch and attention to garner in the college football world, it is in your best interest. And if you are doing right by your company and everybody who's invested in it, your entity, the playoff, right? The best move is actually to let the Big Ten into the playoff if they're deserving, right? The loyalty of the college football playoff is not to all the rest of the college football world who feels very jilted by the Big Ten and wants to leave them hanging out there on an island. That's not their responsibility. So I actually will have to say here on this big news day in college football that I side with the Big Ten in that. And the fact of the matter is, the eyeballs prove it, what I'm saying, because the lowest rated college football playoffs have been in 2017 and 2018, which were the 2 years that the Big Ten was not included. One of those years, Notre Dame got in. One of those years, it was two SEC teams. So we can complain about it all we want, and I will. And if Ohio State has only played six games by the time the playoff rolls around and they get in over like 8-1 or 9-1 Oklahoma, I will be furious. But I think the playoff is still doing right by itself and doing right by what its responsibility should be to go ahead and consider those teams. You kind of have to say it through like your clenched teeth. But that is actually where I stand on that.
So during the summer, we mentioned the Big Ten before they announced that they're not going to have the football season. And I brought up how big of an issue the COVID-19 was with the Big Ten. For some reason, they just couldn't find a way to get it under control within their athletic programs. Over half of the schools had it bad enough to where they had to pause summer workouts. And I think now, if they didn't have certain mandates in place, that they would maybe be a little bit more flexible with that, with pausing, with trying to play sports. But I will say, for Big Ten football, they are going to have to be so keyed in on what they're doing to try to avoid going out, having a good time, just staying in their own bubbles. They have to be so disciplined, because have you seen what the Big Ten is doing when it comes to testing and the rapid testing? So if you haven't, I'll explain it to you, because I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard yet. So they're going to start doing rapid testing September 30th. Every day, student-athletes tested for COVID-19. If a player tests positive, and remember, the Big Ten is playing 8 games in 8 weeks. There is no flexibility. If a player tests positive for COVID-19, they must sit for 3 weeks, 21 days. They have to be away from the program before they have to get back in. And they still have to pass the tests. They got to have a clean bill of health.
Which is, by the way, a week longer than what the NCAA mandates. So, yes, the Big Ten has more stringent requirements. And, Mitch, I actually think that supplements my point, because all I'm saying is the playoff should be saying, yes, the Big Ten is in consideration. That doesn't mean that they have to let the Big Ten in here. And that's really a concession to everybody else that hates the Big Ten, like I, and would not want to see them in there in the end. It's, well, say, yeah, we'll consider you, but you guys better hope that you get your games in, because you're trying to play 8 games in 8 weeks. And what have we always heard about the playoff? It's data points, right? The Big 12 needs a championship game because of that extra data point. Well, if they're going to abide by that, the Big Ten is already behind the eight ball on number of data points that will be out there on their teams. And then if you do have games getting canceled, games that aren't able to be played, which there have already been three in the Big 12 alone so far this year, well, there goes more data points for your teams in the Big Ten. Yes, they do have more stringent requirements for guys who test positive, meaning the Big Ten likely will be missing more players for more time than everybody else in college football, which hurts their cause. So it may still be that this all works itself out, and the Big Ten is able to allow its student-athletes a chance to play, but because of the decision-making of their commissioner and presidents, they put themselves too far behind the eight ball to legitimately be in the college football playoff. All is right with the world, right? Because the other problem that I would have with shutting them out right now and saying, no, you guys, too late, is that the kids, you know, the players here didn't do anything wrong. They would have been out there already playing right now. Mm-hmm. It was the university presidents and Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, who put them in this position and made that decision. So that, I think, is the best case scenario in the way that it can all work out. Hey, a couple of games for each team in the Big Ten get punched. They don't happen. Now you have less data points. You're playing games without some of your key players. I think it can all work itself out. But if you're the playoff, you have to say, yeah, we need the eyeballs. We need the attention in college football. We need to allow these teams to be in consideration.
And vice versa. The Big Ten wants the money for getting into the college football playoff, and there's certainly a seat for them at the table.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, they want it desperately. They want it desperately. Now, I got to play you something here.
Okay.
Because I opened up the show saying a part of the Big Ten's plan that I really like is the fact that they're playing an 8+1 schedule. So they're going to play 9 conference games. No messing around with playing teams from the Sun Belt and harming your reputation like the Big 12 did. This is what really got my wheels turning on that. I mean, it was obvious after the weekend, like, man, that's frustrating. You wish you wouldn't have scheduled those games. I wish the Big 12 would have followed through with my plan in the first place, which I thought was better for COVID to just play all conference games. But this is taken from RJ Young, who we've had on the show here, who is now really a national college football voice on YouTube and ESPN Radio. But he's an Oklahoma guy by trade. Like, he's based out of Oklahoma, started by working for Soonerscoop.com. And I caught him saying this with another gentleman from Soonerscoop.com earlier today.
Again, it's an OU Texas league. And I feel like it'd be better if Oklahoma and Texas were independents right now. That's where I'm at right now. I'm desperately wanting to blow up the Big 12. Do you want to blow up the Big 12? I want you to play out.
I'm kind of there with you. Who knows? I really just don't know what to make of this conference right now. I would be all for a tear down and restart. I think that there's going to have to be some serious reflection if this thing pans out the way that this past weekend indicates.
Okay. Now, take into account, radio shows are your opinions cranked up to 13. I don't know if that's truly the belief there that Oklahoma's media mafia wants to secede from the Big 12, to blow up the Big 12 and be independent. And there are a lot of problems with that. Namely, Oklahoma almost lost. I mean, they went to overtime at home with Army 2 years ago. The same thing has happened to Oklahoma before. They also this weekend played Missouri State, who may have been the weakest team that anybody played in the league. It's unfair to cast that kind of judgment on the Big 12. These teams, K-State, Iowa State, and Kansas, went out and played teams that are capable enough of beating just about anybody in the Big 12 on a given day, and did so with the backdrop of COVID where nobody's ready. So there are a lot of caveats, and I'm not going to lie. I was triggered when I first heard the clip, right? As a K-State fan, you're triggered. Like, hey, easy there, Oklahoma. Why don't you concentrate on not losing a stupid game in October and then getting blasted in the college football playoff, and maybe you can figure out some of your own problems as far as getting into the playoff on a regular basis. However, there's truth to what they're saying and their main point on how they got there, which is the Big 12 harmed its reputation by going out and playing those games against the Sun Belt. And it will be used against them by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee and national media. You will hear all of those voices bringing back to light what week one was for the Big 12 when the time comes to actually put teams in the playoff. You will. So I understand their frustration. Are they taking it too far? Yes. Are they not looking in the mirror at themselves? Yes. But are they also making a pretty valid point? Also, yes.
I couldn't get over that guy's high-pitched voice and how higher he made it when he was talking. That was a little bit distracting.
Be nice to RJ. He's been on our show before.
I know. He's a good guy, but dang it. I just, when you take your voice and your personality to the next level, tends to turn me off a little bit. I don't have much to argue with that with you there. I don't have a counterpoint to what you said. I mean, Texas, they just kind of started getting their reputation back just a couple of years ago.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Don't even get me started. I mean, Texas, the fact that they're just lumping them in because they're good this year and they are Texas. But, Texas has been farting out 7-win seasons for a decade and a half now. So, yes, it's ridiculous to be holding them up there. Fair point.
Everybody in the Big 12 at some point has been laughed at in the last couple of years just because they lost a game or two. I mean, Texas has been at the most in the last 4 or 5 years because they were supposed to be back, and then, well, they're not back until they went to a Sugar Bowl and they won it. And Sam Ehlinger says the we're back. I mean, I'll be honest, I loved it, but is Texas back until they go to a Big 12 championship game and win the thing? That's up to anybody's argument. It's Oklahoma's the front runner. They've won the most Big 12 championships. They have been the team that's gone to the college football playoff. That's the one we should be worried about losing the most. If independent for a year, I don't know if you could do that, but whatever. It's a pandemic year. I say you do whatever you want and you play whoever you want because we're kind of just doing whatever we want to do anyway. It doesn't really matter. You said it yesterday. There's going to be an asterisk next to this whole season.
There are things that contractually bind them into the Big 12 at this point. But they have every right to be frustrated with what the rest of the league did because we do know that in general, I mean, who is the only Big 12 team that's made the playoff? It's Oklahoma. We know in general who this is going to hurt. It'll come back on the Sooners. That's the rest of the league writing checks that won't cash for Oklahoma when it comes time to cash them. It is.
Iowa State is the only one that hurt the reputations because, really, it's been the media that has built that reputation. I mean, Matt Campbell and Jamie Pollard, they've done a certain amount of work, but it's been the media that's blown them up, making them a big deal than what they actually are.
Iowa State did more harm than anybody else. You are correct. Iowa State did. I mean, Kansas. Well, Kansas is Kansas. And I think people realize, you know, K-State and Arkansas State are probably not as far apart as we would like to believe they are around here.
And the Raging Cajuns, they won 11 games last year. They were a good team.
Yeah, no, hey, they were. But Iowa State losing by 17 at home when they've been built up to what they are, that was the hit that hurt the most. And that's who Oklahoma should be, frankly, maddest at. But I digress. Ask Us Anything is next, and we have some questions submitted by our favorite listener, Pam, coming up.
Miss any of the show? I don't want to live on.
All right, some questions for Ask Us Anything submitted by the lovely Pam. If you weren't American, Mitch, what nationality would you like to be?
God. If I wasn't American, I'd probably go somewhere European. Give me, I'd either go Dutch or Swedish, because everybody in Sweden is good-looking.
Good-looking and happy.
I think Dutch, like the Netherlands, one of the happiest countries on Earth. So I would probably go there. Dutch or Swedish.
Good-looking, peaceful, and happy. I tell you what, if there were an appetite for K-State sports in Sweden, and therefore my skill set would translate, I'd be living there right now. I might go Finland, though, Mitch, because it's statistically the happiest country in the world.
Oh, okay.
So I might go Finland.
I mean, a lot of countries in Europe are pretty happy. They have things under control.
You've been drafted, Mitch. What war would you want to have served in and why?
Gosh. Probably, give me the Civil War. You don't have that travel overseas to Europe, those long boat rides. I think in Civil War, the attack strategy was a little bit better. I think they still did the waves. But there were like trenches. You didn't exactly just standing in line, just wait to be shot, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you had a lot more thought put into that than I would have imagined. And that was, I asked you this question. That was the one in particular I asked you before we went on the air. And you actually had a great answer. I was like, man, I don't know the mind's that thoughtful. The only thing I have to say, wherever the least amount of people got killed. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I wouldn't last for 2 seconds out on the battle. I would just be fodder to be mowed down by somebody. So whatever takes me as far away from that as possible, that's what I'm doing. That's it. I got nothing else on that.
I'll have to look that up because I don't know what that is.
What war that America was in that had the least amount of people killed?
Yeah.
Yeah, please let me know about that.
I want to... Well, Vietnam always gets...
Mitch, I am not going to Nam. You are not sending me to Vietnam. That is not happening at all.
So I want
to
say the Civil War. Actually, I think World War II had the most. I think World War II had the most. I don't know who had the least.
Vietnam would probably be last on the list of places that I want to go, just based on the little bit that I know about it. I mean, I'm no wartime historian here, but that seems pretty awful.
I think you're going to be, when it comes to a major war, it looks like you're going to be looking at, well, the Gulf War, actually. Looks like the Gulf War is where you'd go.
The Gulf War. Okay.
Either that or the War of 1812.
Well, that sounds okay. The War of 1812. That's a long time ago. What happened in the War of 1812?
I mean, that was actually a year that was 3 years. Gosh, you know what? Actually, I don't know a whole lot about the War of 1812.
I don't either. I think I'll roll the dice on the War of 1812. Just take me and throw me into the War of 1812.
I know Great Britain and Ireland were involved. That's about it. That's all I can really tell you.
All right. We know war things. You're welcome for that.